What's up, guys? Welcome to the Hypertrophy Cast. My name is Louis Frielingsdorf, and this is the first English episode because we have a really, really special guest on here today. It's Steve Hall. Steve is a natural bodybuilder and coach. He's the founder of Revive Stronger and a podcast host himself. And I'm really glad to have you on here today, Steve. How are you doing?
I am. Well, you just saw me cough, but hopefully I'm going to hit the mute whenever I know I'm going to sniff or cough, because I know how annoying that is as someone listening. But apart from that, I'm pretty good. We're just talking off air about how I'm excited to actually, it sounds really wrong saying this, I'm excited to deload, but yeah. I literally am, to have some downtime. It would be really nice. But yeah, I'm excited to be the first English guest, and I'm sorry that I don't know any German really.
That's all good. And most people probably know you already, but do you want to introduce yourself a little further to listeners which may not?
Sure. So like you said, I'm a natural bodybuilder and I kind of founded Revive Stronger, and myself and Pascal Flohr head that up. And now we're kind of really excited that we've got a team of coaches. So we have Ryan Solomon on the team, and also Harry Smith, which is super cool. Jess is also our intern, so she's actually busy competing at the moment in the IFBB, so she's not currently doing too much for us, but she'll be doing more in future. And then Miguel Blacute heads up our science department, which is quite nice, and he's a super smart dude. So that's us at Revive Stronger, and we're essentially like a content creator, but also mostly just a coaching service for people who are just very interested in kind of maximizing their physique progress. And lots of competitors taking to stage as well, which is super cool. And that's what I do. A large part of my life is consisting around bodybuilding, coaching people who are interested in that kind of pursuit. And then, yeah, I mean, I compete in natural bodybuilding. Last time was in 2017. Thankfully, I say thankfully, I didn't have any expectations. I managed to qualify for the British finals in the MPA and UK DFBA, and actually managed to place in both of the top five, which was pretty cool and humbling, because the sport is getting ultra competitive each year. It's just insane. You may have been at the GMBF just recently. I know Arnie was there, and the competitors are just getting insane. So yeah, that's, I guess, summarizes me in a little nutshell.
Yeah, great. Thank you for the introduction. I've been following you and the Revive Stronger team for quite some time now, and it's great to see everything growing. And I've attended some seminars as well, and these have been great. And so what about your current off season? You've been training twice per day for quite some time now. How's that all going for you, and when do you plan to compete again?
Cool. So yeah, like I said, 2017, the season finished probably around this sort of time, actually. That's essentially when finals are. So ever since then, I've been in like off season, and I've been gaining for the majority of that period of time, a few kind of mini cuts thrown in, some maintenance periods thrown in. And for the majority of it, it's been twice per day training sessions. So kind of training, I normally train at like 11, 10 a.m. and then at about 4 p.m. in the afternoon. So luckily I get to do it when there's no rush hour, like in first thing in the morning, and last, like after 5 p.m. it starts to get really busy, which is very nice. And I'm very fortunate to be able to do that. Each time I kind of mini cut and did maintenance periods, which we call like the primer phase or Revive Stronger, I just went back to once per day. The twice per day training is kind of fun, but it loses that novelty, especially like, for example, this week, training twice per day, when that evening session comes around, you're just kind of like, eh. So yeah, the next time I'm looking to probably compete is next year, so 2020. So that would have been like a 3-year off season. And hopefully I've improved enough. I say likely compete just because you never know what's going to happen. I don't like to say like I'm 100% going to compete, because you just don't know. And I'll make a really honest assessment after the first kind of diet phase that I do, before kind of the digging phase into contest prep, and just be like, realistically, am I satisfied enough? And if I'm honest, if I'm not satisfied enough, I don't know when I'll be satisfied, because this off season has been really productive. And I don't think I'm going to get as a productive wave of gains as I probably have this off season, because I think things will just start slowing down.
Uh huh. Yeah, great, man. Sounds really good. And our today's topic is long-term planning for muscle growth, or in other words, macrocycle periodization. And yeah, we can organize our training within different time scales. So we have our microcycle, which represents a week of training. Then we have our mesocycle, which is a group of microcycles and can last approximately 4 to 7 weeks in most cases. Then we have our macrocycle, which is kind of the overall training plan, which consists of a couple of mesocycles and can go up to years of training eventually. So let's say someone is training exclusively for hypertrophy. I think we both can agree that massing is like the most essential phase in that case. And when you approach a mass phase, what's like the minimum length for that?
Cool. Yeah. I mean, as anyone who's been training for a decent period of time knows, muscle growth is not quick. It's not like in a week, like fat loss, you can see a difference in the mirror. You're not seeing that because muscle is just such a slow thing. And it also kind of, I think of it like a factory turning on. The factory members kind of get into some momentum and they start building. So it's something that is kind of long and slow in that sense. So the absolute shortest I could ever fathom someone doing a mass phase is like two back-to-back mesocycles, like you mentioned. So that might be anywhere from like 10 to 15 weeks, or like maybe 8 to like 20 weeks or something like that. So at least two back-to-back mesocycles for massing. Any shorter than that, and I think you're probably just spinning your wheels and wasting time, because I don't know what you're then going into. I'm sure there could be some like out there context where doing kind of a single month of massing would make sense, but I can't see many for most people, just because, like we said, it's just such a slow and long process.
Yeah, definitely agree, because you also need like that second mesocycle to kind of see how progression is going. You can't really compare like weeks within a mesocycle to each other. You may need to have like another mesocycle where you can compare like mesocycle 1 week one with mesocycle 2 week one. So everything down, you can't really tell whether you're really progressing on putting on muscle, I guess. So, what about like the weight of gain? I mean, many people like the idea of lean bulking, so putting on as little fat as possible. And then there's like dirty bulking. People like enjoy to eat a lot and be in a really high caloric surplus. And I guess the answer is probably somewhere in the middle, as always. So, you came up with the term methodical mass recently. So, what's it all about, Steve?
Yeah, great question. And it's something that I don't think a lot of people really think about when they get into things, especially like as a beginner. I just know when I did exactly what you said. I've done both extremes. So when I first got into like my ever mass, first mass, I was like, okay, I'm going to do a clean bulk. I didn't call it a lean bulk. I called it a clean one, because all the food I was eating was quote unquote kind of clean. But I was in a huge surplus, and I was gaining, if I wasn't gaining like half a stone or 5 pounds, 6 pounds in a week, I was like, I need to increase my food, which is like crazy. That's a super fast rate of gain. I was super skinny at the time, and thankfully I was probably regaining some muscle tissue that I'd lost whilst kind of recovering from an accident. So I was fortunate in that sense. But by the end of that, I did that for like a year. I'd gained a heck of a lot of weight, and I was like pretty chubby. I'd gained some muscle, but not the most effective way to do things. Efficiency wise, sure, I probably maximized my muscle growth potential, but I certainly overshot big time fat. That cost was just too high to make the overall kind of ratio efficient. And then once you've done that, you're like cut down, and then you're like, now I don't really ever want to get that fat again. I don't really want to ever go there. And this is when I came across like lean bulking, and I came across, oh, when you've been training for a few years, you can only realistically gain a pound of muscle per month. And I was like, oh, so I should only really be gaining a pound per month, which when you realistically try and measure that on like a weighing in daily and seeing weekly averages, it just becomes a complete mind fuck, for lack of a better term. You're just constantly kind of trying to juggle your macros and kind of make sure your body weight doesn't go too high. If you end up like going out for a high sodium meal and you don't realize that's going to have an impact to your scale weight, you might end up cutting down your calories way too much. So I ended up doing that, and I effectively spun my wheels for a long period of time because I was just way too anal about the scale weight. And I was obsessing, like you said, so much focusing on gaining limited amounts of fat whereas I should have been focused on gaining maximal muscle. That's such a better mindset to have during a gaining phase. And it put me in a really awkward position that I called like adipose phobia, where kind of you're scared of gaining fat. And I think it's just something that's, it's kind of like thinking, oh, I've got these new trainers. I want to wear them out because I love my new trainers, but I'm so scared of them getting dirty or someone standing on my foot. It's like, well, you're never really going to enjoy your trainers. You're never going to get the most out of them if you don't just bloody wear them outside. And yeah, take care. Don't jump in puddles and don't like go and run in mud, but kind of you got to expect you're going to gain some dirt, but you can go home and clean them. It's fine. And they're going to last for a long period of time before you need a new pair. And that's very much like a gaining phase, the way I see it, like methodical massing. Like you go out there and sure, you're going to gain some fat, and that's a cost of doing business, just like getting your shoes a little bit dirty. But you can come in, have a mini cut now and then, get them clean again, go out again, have some good wear out of them. And then eventually it's fine. Like they're going to get dirty. They're going to get kind of a bit kind of worn. You're going to be a bit fluffy, but you've gained a ton of muscle. You've got a load of wear out of those trainers. And now you can go and buy some new ones, or you can do an extended cutting phase and really strip down and start again. And this is, yeah, methodical massing. It's kind of that middle ground between you're maximizing your muscle growth, but you're not kind of needlessly gaining a bunch of extra fat, but you're not trying to just gain minimal amounts of fat and not allowing yourself to gain the muscle that you should be because you're training so hard. And I think finding that sweet spot is, it's kind of a sweet spot, but it's kind of a range. And I kind of like 1 to 2% of additional body weight per month. So for me at 200 pounds, that's 2 to 4 pounds. For other people, it might be closer to like 1.5 to 3 pounds. And I think anywhere around that is great. And I quite often will aim for the upper end of it and I'll end up hitting the lower end. Other people might be the other way around. They can aim for the lower end. They might hit the upper end. Totally fine. The worst thing I think is for people to, I think even worst is when you're really strict about that lean gain and you're massively overanalyzing things, super anal, you train super hard, and at the end of the day, you've got barely anything to show for it. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think even someone who's doing that dirty bulk, at least they're enjoying the hell out of their food. They're probably training super well. They're definitely gaining some muscle. And then actually maintaining muscle and cutting fat is much easier process. So this is why I'm a little bit more on the side of, if you're going to do anything, be a little bit more assertive rather than kind of really slow.
Awesome. Really, really great answer. And yeah, I love the analogy with the trainers. That one was really great.
and I made that up on the spot. That really? Came out of nowhere.
Damn, that's a great analogy, really. And in one of your infographics, you compared like muscle gaining with cycling upwards the hill. And it's like a hard and slow process. And fat loss is more like cycling downwards. It's rather fast and easy. And yeah, so it definitely makes sense to try to maximize muscle growth instead of pain, because you can always cut the fat off later, because phases are so much more easy and fast for most people. So that totally makes sense. So I think we made it clear that you will put on body fat while massing. So perma bulking is not really an option unless you want to end up like Jabba the Hutt. So let's say body fat isn't a concern for someone. Are there any other reasons why we should not run massing phases over and over again?
Cool. So yeah, it's funny that infographic, I was surprised that it got any kickback, but some people gave it kickback. And I think it's because people just think about massing as like gaining weight. And sure, gaining weight is easy, but actually gaining muscle is hard. So this is where people get it wrong. And this is where we're kind of a bit of ahead of the curve, because I know you do this as well, Lewis, where we synergize training with nutrition. And this is another consideration apart from body fat to why maybe you want to have periods. Like I said, I had maintenance periods where if body fat isn't concerned, a maintenance period can really serve you well. And this is because when we're training for hypertrophy, we should be training with decent amounts of volume. As we know, especially in the short term, volume is the prime driver for hypertrophy, assuming we've got our relative intensity in place. So we're doing a lot of volume. What does that do to us? It really fatigues the hell out of us. It's a hugely fatiguing thing. Like I said, I'm crying out for my deload. Imagine doing months upon months upon months of that. The wear and tear on the body, the accumulation of all that fatigue within the body, you start seeing less and less effective results, just like potentially we see when you gain more and more fat mass. You don't see as good a kind of ratio of kind of muscle to fat gain. you slowly gain a little bit more fat than muscle, just because the body becomes less and less kind of sensitive to muscle growth. So the same is with training. You have to do more and more and more to kind of see the same result. And there becomes a point of which there's kind of diminishing returns. We see a bit of resistance build up. You could call this kind of anabolic resistance. It sounds super scary, but you can't avoid it. As you get older, even anabolic resistance kicks in. So as this happens, again, wear and tear, potentially see things like AMP kinase, which is kind of a catabolic increase. We see mTOR decrease. This is, again, anabolic. We don't really want that to happen. Probably physiologically we're feeling it in the gym as well, where we're not getting as good pumps as we used to, which is probably a sign of kind of some anabolic resistance kicking in. We're probably feeling a bit more beat up, and we're not getting as good kind of feeling from our training. It's just feeling like it's just all encompassing, getting us too much. And essentially, if you go through and you periodize for hypertrophy, you get to a point of which you're at such a high amount of volume to see any kind of efficacious result that you end up kind of having nowhere to go. You kind of hit a brick wall in terms of the amount of volume that you can kind of do and see productive results from. So you get to a point at which you're kind of like, right, okay, my fat levels are okay, so I don't need to cut, but my training fatigue is at a point at which it makes sense to start actually thinking about lowering it. This is where we kind of termed it a primer phase, or you could think of it as a resensitization phase, like RP call it, or just a maintenance phase, or even a strength phase. The reason I liked primer phase and I kind of coined that term is because this period of time is setting you up for success. A lot of bodybuilders are scared to kind of stand still, and they see it as standing still. They don't see it as like resting and recuperating to push them forward. It's hard enough to sell a bodybuilder on a deload, let alone trying to sell them on like an extended period of time where we're just doing an amount of volume that's going to maintain our muscle mass. The great thing about that is it's such a low amount of volume. Like, it's probably lower than even most people would ever set their volumes at. But it's certainly like, it could be 50% of what you've been doing throughout your kind of hypertrophy training. But the great thing about that is that allows loads of the things that accumulate in terms of fatigue to start repairing themselves. So whilst deloads are great and they do somewhat allow us to keep kind of training fatigue under control, they don't allow fully. Things that are really poorly innervated with kind of blood flow take a long time to recover. We don't always see those things under the hood actually accumulating damage, and it could just suddenly hit us. So it's a really good preventative measure of injury. And we know the best bodybuilders are the ones who have been lifting the longest. To lift the longest, you kind of need to make sure you're not getting injured so often, because that will hold you back big time. So it's a really good injury prevention tool. But also, when we're kind of training with lower volumes, we see that AMP kinase drop down, mTOR can therefore be in a better position, that fatigue really drops down. Also during this phase, like I said, it's kind of like a strength phase, because you're focusing on lower repetitions, higher load on the bar, and that may well help shift muscle fiber types to more of a fast twitch muscle fiber type, because they're being recruited more with the heavy loading, and that muscle fiber type is more hypertrophic. So again, as we train with higher and higher volumes, we're becoming potentially more of an endurance-based kind of physiology, because that's what high volume training does. But so high repetitions tends to do, where our kind of muscle fiber type ratio starts shifting towards more of that. And those slower twitch muscle fibers just don't hypertrophy as well. So by doing kind of a high intensity strength sort of phase, we kind of set ourselves up to be faster twitch, which hopefully when we go back into hypertrophy training, sets us up and primes us for that. And now we're injuries way lower. We kind of buy a load of time to again push for a kind of macro cycle, more of massing. Like a deload buys you a mesocycle, a primer phase, or a maintenance period after a long period of time of high volumes buys you like a whole nother macro cycle of massing. So that's where those come in, and they can be really, really helpful. And I think they're massively undervalued, and you don't have to do them that often. It might even be once every 6 months, or maybe once a year you end up doing it. If you incorporate mini cuts, you really keep things under control and keep things tight. But a lot of people won't even do them that often. Or it might be that people don't need to, because they have active recovery periods when they go on holiday. They have 2 weeks just off the gym. These things can do a similar thing. But sometimes just a low volume phase can really help out.
Yeah, super great in-depth answer. Loved it. And I think maintenance or primer phases, as you call them, are really great tool. And I think the term is yeah, really great primer phase, because most people associate maintenance with like a waste of time, but they forget that those kind of phases have a potentiation effect, which makes the following phases much more effective. And I also loved your house analogy on that. You compared like messing to building the house. It's again a long and stressful process. Cutting as like cleaning the house, it's fast but also kind of stressful. And maintenance is like actually living in the house, and that's really low stress, and yeah, just makes more room for more building or cleaning afterwards. So yeah, I think yeah, you described the primer phase really, really well. And where would you place them in the context of our macro cycle? So yeah, you already said you can buy yourself like another cycle of gaining, but yeah, what about like when you have cutting phases or something?
Cool, yeah, and that analogy I completely forgot about works really well into this, so thank you for reminding me of that. I actually have to give credit to one of my clients who brought that up to me as we were going through these phases. So David Beamish, if he ever listens to this, that's a shout out to him. I haven't spoken to him for a while. But yes, the primer phase is essentially in a macro cycle for massing. You get to a point with your training. It depends on the person and when they hit that point where their training fatigue is getting to a point where it's unsustainable. For most of the people I work with and for myself, that tends to be every kind of 3 to 4 mesocycles of massing. Maybe 2 if you've been massing a long, long time and you've done mini cuts, and I'll get onto why that might be why afterwards. But after 3 to 4 mesocycles of massing, I've normally taken someone through from 5 to 30 repetitions, and they are at a point where they're using metabolite work, they're focusing on the higher repetition range, and they're kind of just like, they've kind of used the kitchen sink of hypertrophy now, and they need just a reset. And there's 2 options for most people in that scenario. They can either help themselves reset and reset body fat levels by doing a mini cut, which can be super effective, but only for people who have done mini cuts before or very experienced with cutting, or just can actually handle it in their life, because some people just, they can't. They have a stressful life and it just doesn't work for them. They'd be better off doing the primer phase. Mm-hmm. But for someone who's like, I don't know, a bodybuilder, they're very serious, very committed, or someone just who can handle these sort of things, maybe they're just kind of, they're self-employed and work from home, whatever it might be, they can go for a mini cut. And the good thing what that does is they can train at minimum effective volume for their typical hypertrophy phase, which for the mini cut, because we're in a deficit, so we have a kind of catabolic like disadvantage in that case, because we're under eating, we need to train a little bit more to maintain that muscle. So I quite often hear people saying, oh, can't I cut whilst doing a primer phase? And it's kind of, that's a dangerous mix, because you're doing maintenance volumes for maintenance food. If you end up doing maintenance volumes for your maintenance food but under eat, then you're going to lose muscle, because that's now no longer maintenance. So that's why we need a little bit more volume during a mini cut, but not super high, because it's a short period of time. If it's extended, then you'd want to bring volume higher than what it is. Like in traditional cutting, you still go from minimum effective volume up to MRV. Hopefully your audience are somewhat familiar with that. Otherwise, I'll have to go through a kind of talking through all the terms.
I think most people probably are familiar nowadays. Yeah.
So yeah, for the mini cut, you're at minimum effective volume. So it's not as low as maintenance volume. It's quite a bit higher, but it's still not up to your MRV. So you're still getting somewhat of a fatigue reduction with your training. It's somewhat resensitizing you. So you get kind of the body fat resensitization in some ways. Like your hunger goes back up, because you're now, you've been in a deficit. If you're feeling stuffed all the time, that helps kick appetite back up. You're somewhat more insulin sensitive because you've been in a deficit, so that should provide a more anabolic response. So this is again potentiating the next mass phase, and because volumes have been a bit lower, you can get away with kind of a volume reduction coming out of it, and you can have another kind of productive macro cycle of massing, or few mesocycles more of massing. Now I think you can probably only get away with maybe 2 at maximum, at a real push, 3 mini cuts before you just need to put in a primer phase. Because the trouble with mini cuts is they're at minimum effective volume. So you're still accumulating fatigue from your training, because it's overloading, above which is maintenance. And they're cutting. So like you said, it's stress. Mm-hmm. You're building the house, you're cutting the house, building the house, cutting the house. You haven't got a break. The body's just not had a break. And that really can't be underestimated, because I think a lot of people try and just build the house, break the house down, build the house, break the house down. But there's no maintenance periods in there to really kind of put stuff together and allow the body to be de-stressed. And I find if you do more than two, it's people who are kind of, they end up getting this cycle where they build up, break down, and they never really build anything long term. They're not averaging up a net increase. They're just building up and building down, and they basically yo-yo dieting, like the general population end up doing. So after about two, you definitely want to end up kind of, maybe each mini cut's also buying you less massing time because you're getting fatter each time. So eventually, if you're competing, you don't want to get too far away from your stage weight. So you're buying less time in that regard, and also the training, you're buying less time because you're still incurring fatigue. So after probably two at most, that's where you'd end a mass. You're probably at peak mass in terms of body fat levels, body weight. Then you would use a primer phase, do an extended cut, and then you could again maintain at the end of that, because again, cutting is very fatiguing. You kind of maintain that, and then again, you bought yourself a long period of time of massing again, where you could incorporate mini cuts. So that's the way I tend to kind of set up my macro cycles for long-term massing.
Sounds great, man. And yeah, let's move on to talk more about cutting phases. We already mentioned mini and extended cuts. So mini cuts probably seem like the holy grail to most people because, yeah, you're losing like a lot of fat really fast, and that just seems like the most optimal scenario. But who should do mini cuts, and when may it be beneficial to incorporate an extended cut instead?
Cool. So yeah, I talked about some people who shouldn't, in terms of like the inexperienced, those who are already under a fair amount of stress. Even those who are like, there's people who are trying to do a mini cut and they're like, I don't know, as a male, like 20% body fat, or as a female, like 30 or plus. It's kind of like a mini cut's not really going to do you justice. You're going to get down to like marginally lean levels where actually you could have just done with an extended cut. And you see these people fall into a trap where they start a mini cut and then it turns into an extended cut. And that's probably not the best setup for you. You'd be better off kind of having a primer phase beforehand or a maintenance period, then an extended cut. So yeah, people who are over fat and past the point of which a mini cut really gets them back into that sweet spot of gaining, which I've said for males is probably between like, some people might be able to be as lean as 8% and feel really good and have productive training, up to like 16% or 17-18% potentially, which is quite a big range. So mini cuts can certainly help people get back into that. But if you're kind of at like 18%, a mini cut's only going to bring you down to like maybe like 15-14 at best. So you might as well do an extended period of time to get right back down to a more productive stage so you can have more time massing. So I don't know if that answers your question.
yeah, somehow I think mini cuts are really not a tool to get lean. It's just like a quick period to potentiate further massing. So many people mistake that, and I think great answer in that regard. So
one thing I'd add, I'd say there's probably a population that are very tempted to do mini cuts, and they tend to be the type of person who have failed other diets because mini cuts sound like, oh, it's just in and out, it's super aggressive, and that's great. The problem is mini cuts set you up for a rebound. That's exactly what they're like for, that because they're set you up for a mass phase. So yeah, it's not for people who are at all diet fatigued. So if they're kind of getting hunger already, if the idea of mini cutting makes them a bit anxious and scared, if they're kind of not on decent amount of food, they're not in a stress-free environment, like it's just going to set them up for that yo-yo.
Yeah, I think for experienced bodybuilders, mini cuts are definitely a great thing to incorporate into the macro cycle. But for people who want to lose weight and really get really lean, or just lose a lot of fat, I think extended cuts are the better way to go. What do you think?
Yeah, 100%. And yeah, mini cuts, like you said, they're really for the advanced population, which might be listening to this podcast.
Probably.
But a lot of gen pop, they end up trying mini cuts, and it just, they're not set up for success coming out of it because there's no exit plan, because they're not really doing it to set themselves up for more massing. They're doing it because they want to get lean.
Yeah. So let's just cover duration and rate of loss for mini cuts and maybe extended cuts. So what would you recommend for people? I mean, one who just want to like have another productive mesocycle of massing. Should they approach their mini cuts?
Cool. So for most people entering a mini cut, I like the analogy of a bank robbery. I think I got that from Alberto Nunez, to give him credit. So he talks about when you're robbing a bank, you don't want to fuck around in there too long because you're going to get nicked. Otherwise, you want to get in, get out, and hopefully you can hold on to what you've got. And the same with a mini cut. It's essentially you want to be as aggressive as you can be for that short period of time, get in and out. I don't think mini cutting less than 3 weeks is particularly effective, just because it's a lot of glycogen reshuffling, water reshuffling, and you're not really, again, even fat loss takes a while to like turn on properly. You're just fluctuating up and down. You're not going to see a lot of results after 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. So I like 3 weeks as a minimum, up to 6 weeks. And during that period of time, anything more than 6 weeks for me becomes probably a mesocycle is hard to continue progressing in, just because if you're starting to hit towards failure, you may see regressions in your training, even if it's going over 6 weeks, especially when you're aggressively dieting. And it's kind of getting into the zone of this. You may be trying to extend it because you probably didn't need a mini cut. You needed an extended cut. Rate of loss would be up to, and this would be very aggressive, 2% of body weight loss per week. I don't think even averaging that is going to be super successful unless it's 3 weeks and maybe you can get away with 2% rate of loss. For most people, there'd be more close to 1% on average loss per week. So it might start off really quick and then probably peter out towards the end. But on average, a body weight loss of 1% per week, which again could for most people be between 1 to 2 pounds per week, which is a 500 to 1,000 calorie deficit or so, depending on the person. And that's the way I like to go for mini cuts. Certainly kind of if you're going much slower than 1%, I'd argue, do you really need to be mini cutting? And potentially you just want to do a maintenance phase instead because you're actually lean and you don't really need that mini cut. That's something I ended up doing. I did a mini cut when I was already plenty lean and I didn't really need to do it. And it was kind of like, why did I even do that? I should have just done a few weeks at kind of low volume and that would have been more productive for me because I would have got the real resensitization to training effect there. And I wouldn't have disrupted any massing, which mini cuts can do, unfortunately. And then for an extended cut phase, you can actually start those out quite aggressive, depending on the person's body fat levels. So typically when someone's starting a longer kind of cut phase, they are relatively softer in physique wise. For a male, maybe they're like 15% or more. For females, maybe they're like 25% or more. And in that case, you've got plenty of fat stores to be able to lose relatively quickly. So again, losing at about that 1% rate of loss, or maybe even a little bit faster than that at the start, I think is absolutely fine. As you lose fat, as you get leaner, there's less available, so you don't want to be losing as quick because there's more risk of losing muscle mass. So when you drop below 15%, between 10 to 15% for a male, or like 25 to 20% as a female, somewhere around that, you probably want to slow that between 0.5 to 1%. So maybe averaging 0.75%. And then as you're dropping down to like, you're actually getting pretty shredded, you're starting to see some kind of separation between muscles, maybe even some striations below 10% or below like 18% for a female. That's where you're losing between 0 to 0.5 and maybe averaging at 0.25% per week. Because if like you don't have that much body fat left on you, so if you lose quicker than that, again, you're risking that muscle loss. So that's how I tend to scale it for fat loss phases and mini cuts.
Great. So we covered massing phases, we covered the primer phase, and we covered cutting phases. So what do you think about strength phases for bodybuilders? Are there any particular advantages incorporating those? I mean, a common belief is that getting stronger makes you bigger, but my observation is that bodybuilders are better off like building muscle and let strength be more like more of a byproduct doing that process. What's your opinion on that?
So I used to believe that getting strong was like, I think I even wrote an article on it that like growing strength is like building the base, the foundation for muscle growth. The stronger you are, the more muscle you can grow, because if you're stronger, you're using heavier weights, you can do more volume. And then having thought about that process a little bit deeper than that, because people are like, oh yeah, sure, if you're doing like 3x10 at 30 kilos versus 3x10 at 40 kilos, well, you're doing more volume with the 40 kilos. Sure you are. But that doesn't take into account the fatigue that that's producing. The 3x10 at 40 kilos is way more fatiguing than the 3x10 at 30, because it's less weight at 3x10 by 30. So maybe you could have done 4x10 at 30, and now you're doing more volume, but it's lighter loads. But if that's the same proximity to failure, that essentially is actually more hypertrophic, assuming you're recovering from it. So my kind of ideology shifted in terms of that, in that maybe even like not being strong is almost an advantage, which makes sense because newbies aren't as strong, yet who's growing the most, the quickest? A newbie, because they can just do so much volume because it's so much less fatiguing. You think about anyone who's really strong, they are getting massively fatigued by the loads mm-hmm. they're lifting. And this is why powerlifters or powerlifting training is not the best way to get jacked, because they're doing heavy loads, and a lot of strength is just a skill-based thing. It's not kind of a muscle mass based thing. And it's completely true that the biggest guys, the best powerlifters, are often the most muscular and the most jacked. But that is kind of, look, it's like the chicken and the egg. It's kind of like mm-hmm. they're not jacked because they're strong. They're strong because they're jacked. Yeah. So this is why if you're like a novice powerlifter, you actually want to spend a lot of time training with lighter loads, higher amounts of volume, gaining lots of muscle, because that's the best way to. And then you potentiate that now muscle mass into strength based. You make it skillful, not the other way around. So I'm completely with you in that dedicated strength phases for a bodybuilder aren't something you really want. And actually getting stronger is just a side effect of getting bigger. That seems to be pretty clear now. And I'm surprised it took so long for like us bodybuilders to realize that. I think for a long time it was thought that actually strength phases were really great for us. And maybe it's because there was much more textbooks and theory behind strength training and not so much behind hypertrophy training. But now, like, Brad Schoenfeld's coming out with all his stuff. Obviously, Mike, Eric Helms, they furthered the field massively. And now we realize actually it looks like strength is just a side effect and actually not something we necessarily desire to aim for. It's more of a, oh, it indicates that we've progressed.
Yeah. Great answer. And I think there might be a time and place where focusing a little bit more on intensity definitely makes sense. You mentioned that in primer phases, for example, you can like put more emphasis on intensity than volume. So you're bringing volume down to maintenance levels and maybe focus a little bit more on the intensity side of things in that phase. So you also mentioned fiber types, that those might shift towards faster twitch fibers in those phases. So what about, intensity-based training within a primer phase?
Yeah, I think it's so similar. It's kind of like they look very, very similar. It's just, I think if you're an out-and-out bodybuilder, you probably just wouldn't emphasize it as much. Mm-hmm. Because it's just, you don't even need to like go that close to failure. You can just go into the gym and really just, as long as it's somewhat hard, somewhat heavy, go somewhat close to failure, you're doing all you need to do. And actually you're probably getting more fatigue reduction. You're probably getting more of the benefits of the primer phase. But a lot of people, and me included, I find that really difficult to do for weeks. So mm-hmm. I quite like thinking, I'm going to push these lifts. I'm going to push them close to failure, and I'm going to see like hit some new PRs because I built all this new muscle tissue after my kind of mass macro cycle. Now I want to see it get strong. And I've had clients who have gone through like that primer phase and they're hitting some like really cool numbers. And they're like, actually, Steve, can we do a strength mesocycle? And I'm like, well, they're gen pop. Their overall goal is like to get bigger and stronger over time. Yeah, let's do a strength phase. And then they hit like some awesome numbers because like gaining muscle, gaining strength is a skill. After a single kind of mesocycle of like 4 weeks, you're hitting some decent numbers. But if you did another one, that's where you really see some big lifts starting to come because you're really starting to potentiate that. But for an out and out bodybuilder, you just want to get back to massing again.
Yeah, I see. So just for like people who try to enjoy their training as much as possible, that might be a good thing to, or just a good variation just to keep things fresh. I mean, yeah, hypertrophy training can be really taxing on the long term. So hitting, three or four mesocycles in a row is like, a really hard thing and can be quite draining after some time. So yeah, for just people who also have problem with adhering, like incorporating a strength block here and there might be a good thing just to keep things interesting and let them adhere better in the long term. So yeah, but great answer. I think the same way. And another term which has become quite popular is like power building, where people focus on getting stronger while getting bigger. And I think that's like you will become like the jack of all trades but master of none. So maybe what's your take on power building?
Yeah, I think power building is really cool, but it's something I've had a hard time with. Like lots of things we've talked about, I've done it the wrong way and I've kind of found and become enlightened, I guess. And the problem with power building is the lack of specificity. It's kind of the first principle of strength training, of any training, is specificity. Kind of everything you should be doing should be working you towards your goal. So you should be able to look at your program and be like, okay, that is getting me more jacked. If your goal is hypertrophy and just hypertrophy and nothing else, really, and you just want to be the biggest, most muscular person as a bodybuilder, you should be able to look at your program and be like, yeah, that whatever that exercise is, whatever the rep range, the intensity, that is definitely the best choice I can be making to get me more jacked. And if you're doing like singles, triples, you have to really like think, is that really like getting me, is that accumulating a lot of volume? Or is that just really fatiguing the shit out of me? Do I just really like lifting heavy? And it's kind of like, well, do you want to do what you need to do and the best is for your overall goal? Or do you want to do what you want to do? Because if you just want to do what you want to do, then let's not have the discussion. And it's kind of hard. But I thought when I was doing power building, it was the right thing to be doing to get the most jacked. Yeah. Because like we said, thought strength was super important. I have to be getting stronger, which I think overall in the long term you should be. But I had just put too much emphasis on it. And what I found is, my kind of heavy barbell training I was doing, which heavy for me, it wasn't even strong, which is funny because I've become much stronger after specifying on like hypertrophy, because bigger muscle, stronger muscle. Yeah. But yeah, I just found I wasn't really getting much stronger. I wasn't really getting much bigger because all my strength training was really fatiguing me. So I couldn't do that much volume afterwards for my hypertrophy training. And because I wasn't doing that much volume for my hypertrophy training, I really wasn't getting much bigger. And so I just wasn't really seeing anything. It was just like butting heads because the lack of specificity. And I kind of like the analogy of, as you go through school, first of all, when you're just learning, you do every subject. Then as you get more and more educated, we do like GCSEs, we go to uni, and then eventually maybe you do like a master's, PhD, all of this sort of thing. You get more and more specific. You pick a few subjects and then you pick like 10, then 3, and then 2, and then eventually 1. And then you pick like a tiny micro subject within the subject, because it gets harder and harder to get more and more knowledgeable or better and better at it. And the same with, if you want to be the most jacked, sure, when you start as a newbie, you could do anything and grow.
Yeah.
And then you could do power building as like an intermediate who's been lifting a couple of years and grow okay. But once you get more advanced, you have such a limited amount of resources. We talked about MRV, and this applies directly to that. If you start trying to spend it on strength training and hypertrophy training, you might spend so much on strength training that you don't actually hit the minimum amount for your hypertrophy training. You might not grow at all. So you have to be very careful with that. And if people are listening and they're doing power building and they're thinking, man, my gains have been really slow recently, then maybe you'd be better off doing like a focused strength phases and hypertrophy phases. Even for a powerlifter, if I was trying to get them the best possible, I wouldn't do power building. I would do specific strength phases and hypertrophy phases, because the body responds best to having everything moving in the same direction. And then you get really efficient growth with that. It's just like if you're trying to kind of gain muscle, if you're going through deficit days and surplus days, and like you just, the body needs just one signal. You're not going to get very efficient growth like that. So better putting everything in one direction, go through a mass and go through a cut. There's reasons bodybuilders do that, because that's the best way to actually go about things. So yeah, other ways can work. They're just very inefficient. Maybe to the point where you just end up maintaining, you don't see any progress.
great insight, Steve. Thank you so much. And yeah, our talk has been really great so far. Let's dive into some practical applications real quick so the listeners get an idea of how to structure their macro cycle, or just have something where they can start. So let's say you get a new client with, and his goal is pure hypertrophy, and he wants to compete in a couple of years. So it might be a good idea to keep body fat levels not too far away from stage conditions. So no Jabba the Hutt mode in that case. So with which phase would you start the macro cycle, and on which factors would you base that decision on?
So if someone was coming to me and they're relatively lean already, maybe they've just ended a extended cutting phase and they're like 10% as a male, awesome, and they're looking to compete, then great. If we've got plenty of time, like a couple of years or a year or so, then we can start massing straight away. In most cases, people have already come to me and they're already, I don't know, it depends. If someone's coming to me and they're come from a high volume phase, like some people have come to me and they've been training with like 30 sets per muscle group or something crazy like that. Yeah. For those sort of people, they're going to be very scared too, but I definitely want to scale their volume back. Maybe not straight to maintenance volume, because they're going to be like, what? I'm going from 30 down to like 8-6 sets? No way. They couldn't adhere to that. But I'd like to scale it down over a period of time. Whereas some people are coming to me and they've been doing high intensity training with very low volume. Great. They have almost been doing like primer phase volume. They've been doing very little kind of towards fatiguing themselves to the volume that I'll be taking them through. And I'd be taking them through then a hypertrophy phase. So based off that, I can then have an assessment of whereabouts are their minimum effective volume levels. If I have no data, then we'll start trying to assess their minimum effective volume, because I guess if I have no data, they probably don't take it overly seriously and they maybe haven't been as committed as they should be. They probably haven't been training as intensely as I hope they would be. So the first thing I'm doing is kind of, okay, I want to assess minimum effective volume. I want to assess how good are they gauging themselves towards failure. So get them to film their form to see how intense they're training, and also have a look at their technique, because some people have been training years and they have terrible technique. Some people, yeah, I'm amazed they film their technique and I'm like, wow, that's better than mine. Like, I wish I had that technique. So that gives me an idea of kind of where are they? What adjustments we want to make? Because normally it's not a case of we have the perfect formula straight away. I need to see how they're training intensity wise, form wise, and then get an idea of how they're kind of feeling from the volume I'm giving them. Mm-hmm. And so if I know they've been doing low volume, then I might start with a similar amount to that or a little bit more. Taking the reference point of like 10 sets per muscle group is kind of a good starting minimum effective volume to start with. Maybe a little bit less for legs. I find most people need less for legs, particularly hamstrings. Sure. Upper body, especially back, tends to kind of need closer to 10 to 12 for a lot of people who have been training a few years. Again, training advancement will dictate this as well. If they haven't been training as many years, they probably don't need as much. Females probably need a little bit more, especially on legs and glutes. They just seem to recover from loads from that and need a fair bit to actually get a good amount. And in that first week, I'm kind of asking them, in fact, this is something I recently added to my spreadsheets, was in terms of their pump, what are they getting within a session, and like low, medium, high, and in session fatigue, what are they getting, low, medium, or high? And what I'm looking for is kind of medium across the board. If they're just low on everything and they're like, Steve, I went into the gym, I felt like I did nothing, then I'm like, shit, we're probably a little bit low. Or rather, not shit, I'm like, okay, that's cool, we can just eke up next week, that's fine. And next mesocycle, we know you need a bit more than that. Mm-hmm. If they were high on everything, I'm like, crap, like, you need nothing, you're great, you can grow from like literally nothing. Yeah. But most people are like actually around the medium point. It's funny, I mean, average is average, right? 10 sets per muscle group per week is average for most people. Typically, most people who come to me, that seems to be where they land. And they end up finding they get a little bit of fatigue, they get a bit of a pump, and that's a good minimum effective dose. And each week they're on, we know if they're recovering, we're going to be adding volume via sets, their reps in reserve are coming down, they're going to progress via either load or repetitions every single week. So they're overloading because we're minimum effective volume, we're progressing that overload over the weeks, so that they're growing maximally through maximal adaptive volume. And eventually they're going to hit naught reps in reserve or one rep in reserve, depending on the movement. And they're probably going to be at their MRV after maybe 5 up to 8 weeks or something, depending on their level of advancement, female, male, and whether or not we've overshot or undershot their MEV, and how good they are also at hitting their reps in reserve. Because a lot of people commonly, well, actually, I've had a bit of a mixed bag. I had initially had a lot of people overshooting it, and so they ended up just repeating performance for a lot of weeks because they were basically at failure. Whereas recently I've had more people being on the conservative side, where I've been like looking at their form like, you need to push harder, and then they push harder. And after a mesocycle, we've learned so much about the individual. We have a much better assessment of their MEV, which always changes. So you kind of are always assessing that, but you have a good baseline of that. And then you learn kind of, okay, you didn't quite push hard enough that first week, so next first week, push a bit harder, or maybe you need to scale back a bit, scale back. And then it just continuously evolves from there.
Awesome. So much great things you mentioned. I'm definitely going to listen to this again afterwards. So yeah, thank you so much, Steve. And I think we covered the topic really well. So good. I think all the listeners definitely know what to do from now on. And hey, thank you so much for your time. Do you have any future plans, any seminars or projects which will come up anytime soon?
So yeah, thank you so much for having me on. I'm honored to be your first English guest and first person speaking in English. Hopefully people can understand me well enough.
Sure, definitely.
And yeah, hopefully lots of kind of useful information there. That'd be really great. If people are looking for stuff that we're doing. So hopefully, in the new year, I don't know if I should say what it is. I actually need to talk to Pascal to say whether or not we can say it, but there's something exciting happening in the new year.
Okay.
It's a big project for us, probably quite a big risk, but we think it'll be worth it and we're very excited about it. And I think it will really help bring a lot of our community together. We're hopefully be releasing that and that will go down well. And then we have no, seminars at the end of this year at the moment, but we do have a big one, the biggest yet, planned in May, early May next year. So awesome. We'll be releasing things about that soon. So hopefully you'll be there, Lewis, and hopefully lots of the listeners will be there. We have planned it to not be on the Body Power weekend because I think that kind of probably upset a few people and made it a bit more difficult. But yeah, early May, and I'm sure we'll have some other seminars and things going over next year as well. But at the moment, that's the only big one.
Damn, that sounds really surprising, and I'm really looking forward to it. So, Steve, where can people find you? Instagram, probably, and what about your website?
Yeah, cool. So the best place, if people want to kind of talk to me directly, I'm most available on Instagram. They can slide into my DMs. I try and reply to all of those. Sometimes I miss them, so I apologize. Sometimes the question is just like a whole load of like writing, and I'm in a bad time, and I'm checking it. But yeah, Instagram's great. And then the other place, revivestronger.com, our website, find our coaching, any of our articles, the podcast is there as well, which I really advise people to go and check out, especially if they like this sort of geeky stuff. It's even more geeky over there probably because I talk to people much smarter than myself. And then I like people to join our Facebook group if they're interested in conversations about this because, there's some really great people in there and it's a nice community that's growing. So I think we're just revivestronger.com on Facebook and they can come and join us.
Yep. I can only recommend all of your stuff. I love the Facebook community. It's a really great place to ask questions and get good feedback. And of course, your podcast. I'm a long-time listener, so I can only recommend that. And I have a Spotify podcast playlist. It's called the Hypertrophy Cast Playlist. And at the end of each episode, we put a song in there. So is there any track you like to listen to? I mean, while doing like a hard set of squats or something in your overreaching rig?
I am probably the worst person to ask about music just because anything that has like a beat, I'm like, that's great. anything that's like strong bass, I'm just like, oh yeah, I don't even listen to the words. So I don't know if you'll be able to find anything, but I tend to listen to Hardwell on Air. He has a podcast.
Yes.
I tend to listen to him. Or I think it's Tiesto. I think he has a podcast as well. I tend to listen to those like drum and bass kind of tunes. Because I don't pay for Spotify Premium and I can't be bothered with adverts. So I end up listening to those podcasts. So if people are interested, that's something to check.
Okay, so no special song you want to put on the podcast playlist? Come on, you need to have any.
I wish. I don't even know songs.
I saw like a Rick and Morty song in your Instagram story. What about that?
They're good, but yeah. I don't listen to those when I train.
No.
I thought so. Man, what can I even think of? I do like quite a lot. I posted N&M today. Toy Soldiers was quite cool, but it's not really a overreaching weak song.
It doesn't really matter. Just give us a song. Come on, Steve.
Yes, go for Eminem, Toy Soldiers.
Eminem.
I don't think it's something similar to that.
Okay, and I'm going to put Lose My Life from Papercut Massacre on the playlist, an old song which I used to love, listen to. And yeah, I think that's it for the episode. Thanks again, Steve, for coming on here. And leave a like, a comment, or whatever. Yeah, in the comment section. So I know you liked the episode. And yeah, if you want to see Steve again, let me know and I'll get him on here again, maybe in some time. And yeah, Steve, wish you a wonderful evening. Thanks for coming again and hope to talk to you soon.
Yeah, thank you so much. And I'll be down whenever if you want to talk again. So yeah, thank you. And I'll talk to you soon.
Awesome. Bye-bye.